Attention, attention all personnel. It's MASHcast.
Hello and welcome to MASHcast, the show that analyzes and celebrates, episode by episode, the greatest TV series of all time, MASH, which aired on CBS from 1972 to 1983. Proud member of the Fire and Water Podcast Network, I'm your host, General Robert Iron Guts Kelly, and joining us this week in the VIP tent is returning guest, Major Tim English. Hi, Tim. Welcome back.
Hey, Rob. Thanks for having me back.
Thank you for coming back. I really enjoyed talking to you last season on for MASHcast, so now we're back here for season three. This is really one of the best episodes of the season. And again, of course, from season three, of course, it is There Is Nothing Like a Nurse. The original air date was November 19th, 1974. It was written by Larry Gelbart, always a good thing, and directed by Hi Averback. So let's get right to it. During a tense moment in OR, Hot Lips comes down hard on one of her nurses and demands that Henry put her on bed arrest. Other than during duty and mealtimes, Nurse Baker has to sit on the foot of her bed at attention for a week. After Henry dismisses Hot Lips and her idea, she grows enraged at Henry and storms out, threatening to go over his head again. As if that wasn't bad enough, Radar receives a message saying that the 477th might be under enemy attack shortly, so all the nurses are to be shipped out to a safer location. Frank responds to the news by insisting trenches be dug all over the compound. With all the women gone, the 477th is a grim murr place. All the men are depressed, and sessions in OR are a mess. Captain Spaulding sings a sad song about how much they miss the women. Hawkeye and Trapper get so bored they park a jeep over Frank while he's in one of his own foxholes so they can watch a mysterious roll of film that's been under his bed. They watch it in Henry's office, and Hawkeye, Trapper, Henry, Radar, and Klinger fall out of their chairs laughing at what they see. It's a film of Frank's wedding. It's a depressing affair, with Frank looking like a grinning moron and his soon-to-be bride looking miserable and stone-faced. They all make comments, Mystery Science Theater 3000 style, admonishing Frank not to get married and suggesting what their wedding night is going to be like. The film ends just as Frank bursts in, saying that the air raid they've been expecting has arrived, except that that air raid is nothing more than 5 o'clock Charlie, ineffectual as always. Henry orders Radar to tell the nurses to come back as soon as possible. They arrive the next morning, to the grateful men of the 477th. All right, Tim. Like I said, I think you're hopefully in agreement with me that this is really one of the best episodes of season three for multiple reasons. This features the second appearance of three appearances by Captain Spaulding, played by Loudon Wainwright. This is probably Captain Spaulding's greatest moment in this show because he has the most to do. Overall, what do you think of this episode?
I actually happen to agree with you. I think this is one of the better episodes of season three. I don't quite absolutely think it's the best episode of season three, but that's a different story. But this is definitely a very good episode.
Yeah, it's very, very fun. I mean, we'll get into it when we go through the episode, but this features the scene with Frank's wedding.
Yeah.
Is one of the all-time great comedy beats of the show, of just the idea that you would get to see footage from home. This isn't the first time MASH did that. We saw some footage of Henry's life back at home before he came to the 477th, and they would do that later on. We would eventually see some other characters, home movies, but this wedding of Frank's is just a comedy goldmine. But again, we will get to it momentarily. But again, I like this idea that, first of all, the opening is great with the nurse, mm-hmm. with Nurse Baker, where she pipes in where Frank is chastising her for being a bad nurse. And of course, we know she's a good nurse because what the hell does Frank know?
Yeah.
He throws the clamp down. And then Trapper jumps in and he says, I'll give you $500 for her. And then Nurse Baker goes, sold, which is great. I love it when they give one of the side nurses who generally don't even get credited in these episodes a laugh line, and I always laughed that very funny that she hates being with Frank so much, and she would run the risk of getting the ire of Margaret by yelling out like that. I think that's a great moment.
It's definitely great when they give those nurses those lines, and I think it's something that they could have done a little bit more often than normal, but not. I mean, you don't want to overkill it and take it away from the main story of what's going on in that moment, but it's definitely great to see when they give a nurse a line like that, like, and snicker back at Frank for being incompetent. And,
yeah. That actress, by the way, is named Barbara Benson. She's not credited in this episode, which is strange
because
she does get a line, as we just mentioned.
Yep.
She basically has only a handful of other credits, most of which were on the TV show Emergency. So that's that. Unfortunately, she did not have much of a career outside of MASH. I don't know what else she was doing, but that's going to it for her. And then we follow this great scene of Margaret coming into Henry's office where he is hungover and he's got like Alka-Seltzer or whatever he's got, some sort of bromide. side to help him deal with the hangover. And Margaret is coming in. And she bangs the door. She grabs the chair and slams it down. She's slamming her clipboard down. It's like she's making absolutely
all sorts of noises.
No concessions to Henry telling her to quiet down. It's great.
You know, I got to be honest. One time I was quite hungover myself, and I tried that method with Alka-Seltzer with what Henry was doing. Didn't work.
Doesn't do anything for you. Okay.
No.
All right.
No, I find a nice bacon, egg, and cheese sandwich does the trick.
Oh,
but,
interesting. Okay.
Yeah, it's definitely an interesting, you know, first minute and a half of the show there. And it's just very well written. And it just kind of flows very nicely into where Margaret is heading up for the nurse. She comes into Henry. She starts complaining. Henry's not really listening, to the point where he asks Radar to find something, a news channel that says maybe the war's over so I don't have to listen to her when she's standing right there.
I love that he says that right in front of her.
Which, of course, gets Margaret even more annoyed. I mean, it would get me annoyed, too, but it's just great comic writing within that first 90 seconds of the television.
I love the whole bit about where he says, you know, if you're not here complaining about the nurses, they're in here complaining, you're really Hermann Göring in drag, which is a great...
which one of them says that?
Which one of them said that? I'm not thinking, Major. And then, boy, the idea of bed arrest, that a nurse is supposed to sit at the foot of her cot for a month straight, like... That's insane. Like, what is that? And then, of course, Henry has that little aside where he's like, you can't keep a nurse in bed for a month, although there are some who have tried it. And McLean Stevenson has this little self-satisfied smile that he's making himself laugh. He knows that Margaret's not going to laugh at it, but he kind of just chuckles at his own joke, which I find very charming.
Yeah, it's definitely a funny moment for sure.
So, and then we have our scene of Captain Spaulding singing a song with Hawkeye and Trapper. And again, this is Loudon Wainwright III making his second of three appearances. Yep. As I mentioned, he gets the most to do here. He gets to sing the most songs. He gets a showcase in the O Club later on.
Yep.
And he even gets a line to Radar. He's like, where are the nurses going, Radar? Like, they actually really give him a lot to do this time.
They do. He's definitely got – it's nice to see them give another doctor some things to do. And I've known Loudon for – No, that's I'm more an acquaintance with Loudon. He's definitely kind of that Spaulding Trapper mix personality, and that to me, when I watch that scene, that's kind of him. He's just always picking up his guitar and just kind of playing along with things. It's really interesting to see him be able to kind of be himself, but also be another character too.
It's an interesting idea to bring this guy in who was not an actor.
Yeah,
now I said you have some personal experience with Mr. Wainwright.
I do. I've had a few interactions with him. I've been playing the guitar for most of my life here. And I was he actually has a house out by where I live. And we're doing just this kind of... I was actually jamming with, you know, you'd appreciate this, Bob Dylan cover band.
Oh, no. And, oh, wow. All my things, all the things I like in one spot.
We were just kind of... the band that I was jamming with at the time... They're called the Complete Unknowns. They've traveled between New York and Long Island just doing Bob Dylan stuff.
Nice name. Good name. Yep. I like it.
They're really, really fine musicians. Really great people. But we were just kind of jamming out in the middle of this like square that we have in Amagansett. And he happens to just kind of walk up and starts talking and hanging out with us. And everybody's like, oh, I know you. I love your music. I love this album. I love this song. And then these guys are in their... you know, 50s and 60s. And here I am at the time, my late 20s, hanging out with these gentlemen who are old enough to be my father. And he looks at me and he goes, well, what about you? Do you know my stuff? And I said, I actually know you as Captain Spaulding.
Oh, my God.
And he just goes, shut the fuck up. And so from there, this kind of like snowballed. And I ran into him a few other times. And he did a show out here 4 years ago now. We have this bar called the Stephen Talk House, and we've had a lot of famous acts come in and do a couple of sets. I mean, I've seen Jimmy Buffett there, Bon Jovi, Paul McCartney's played there. But for the 30th anniversary, Loudon came in because he plays there once a year. And I just feel this tap on my shoulder, and I'm at the bar getting a drink, and I turn around, and it's him.
Wow.
And he goes, since the last time I saw you, have you listened to any of my damn music? And I said, I just went, no, Captain. And he goes, all right, watch this. So he goes up when he does his set, and he kind of like, he didn't point me out, but he goes, there's somebody here, I won't embarrass him, but doesn't know my music, but knows my illustrious career from MASH. And this is the song that I performed during an episode. And then, and then he kind of went into Unrequired to the nth degree. And it was kind of a cool moment.
That's amazing!
Yeah. It's something I'll never forget. I just see him about town every once in a while. And since then, I properly introduced myself. So every once in a while, it's been a couple months that I've seen him. But
that is you did not, everybody listening, Tim told me he had a story about Loud and Ordinary, but he didn't tell me what it was.
No.
That's amazing. That's so impressive that he remembered the song.
Yeah.
Oh, because, I mean, I don't get the sense that that's something in his repertoire. Right? That he keeps, you know, that's something that he plays a lot. He did it specifically for MASH.
No, that's... Unrequited to the Nth Degree is actually on one of his albums. So it's actually
Is it really? Oh, okay. Okay.
Yeah. The other one where he's singing about the nurses, I'm sure, was written for.
Right.
But that song that's at the end and also a little bit in the beginning, that's his song.
That's amazing. That's fantastic. That's good that he had a sense of humor about it.
It's so funny because he's always been, every time I've seen him since then, he's just been this kind of like, he has a trapper personality where he's always so sarcastic most of the time, but he can be nice and serious. And he's definitely a really chill, nice person to talk to.
That's fantastic. That is just amazing. I love that. Would make me, I would dine out on that moment forever if somebody did that to me in a bar.
I gotta be honest, the first couple times I was like a kid in a candy store trying to like contain myself. Be like, don't be an idiot. Don't do anything stupid.
Right.
Living out here, I see famous people all the time, but you know, when the weather gets nicer, I do see people I recognize from TV, music, whatever. 90% of the time, I don't get bothered by it unless it's Paul McCartney or Jimmy Buffett. I'm Parrothead, and I love the Beatles too. But unless it's the two of them or somebody that's associated with either MASH or The Office, and it's like trying just to contain yourself because I don't want to make a fool out of myself and be like, oh,
right.
I love you for this. Because people don't want to deal with that. But
Right, exactly. People have said, I don't mean to get off topic, but people have said to me, oh, I'm sure for Pod Dylan, your ultimate guest would be Bob himself. I'm like, no, I don't want that because I'd make an ass of myself. I don't want to do that. You know, I wouldn't be able to contain myself. So that's an amazing story, Tim. Yeah,
As I told you after we recorded the last time, I'd also had met Alan Alda a couple times.
Yes. And I was so mad at you because you told me after we wrapped the show, I'm like, wait a minute, you what? So tell that story too while we're here.
I felt like I couldn't fit it in to a certain spot.
Here we go. Let's stop the show. Tell the story.
Okay. I've met him three times now and once since the last time you and I had talked. The first time I saw him, I was in my office, my real estate office in Bridgehampton. And I'm face down at the computer. It's midsummer sometime. I don't remember when it was. But I'm just typing away, not paying attention to what's outside the window. And then I just all of a sudden, I hear this laugh. And I just shut up. And I said, holy shit, I know that laugh. And I kind of like went over to the window, not creepily. I mean, I was trying not to be creepy anyway. And I'm just like staring, you know, out of the window. And it's Alan and his wife, Harleen. And he just looks up and waves. And then he walks away.
Hmm.
And a couple of months later, I saw him again. But this time in a different village out here, Sag Harbor. And same thing. They're looking in the windows. And they start talking. Him and his wife start talking about one of the photos. And she comes in. He doesn't. But she was asking about one of the listings. And I was talking to her about it. And I knew they weren't serious. I know he's lived out here for 20, 30, 40 years. He's got a house out here. And so I tell her about it. She goes away. And about this time last year, my business partner and I had gone out to lunch. And in this restaurant, there's like a row of tables where they seat two people and they're back to back to back to back. And him and Arlene walk in.
Oh, man.
And when I tell you my business partner's back was to Alan Alda's back, I nearly lost my cool. And my business partner knows how much I love the show and how much of a fan of his other work I am. Like, I'm also a huge fan of The West Wing, so I love his role in that. And
I loved him on that.
And also in The Aviator and, you know, other things. But she's just like, my business partner's like, just calm down. She's looking at me like, just calm, be calm, be cool. She could tell I'm like getting antsy, I'm fidgeting and stuff. So later on, we all get up to leave kind of at the same time. And my business partner leaves. And Alan and his wife are behind me, so I hold the door open for them. And Arlene recognized me from the real estate office. So she was talking to me. And then, of course, he was there kind of, you know, just part of the conversation, but not really contributing. And I just stopped. I said, I have to say hi, just because I love the show MASH and the rest of your career. But I got so into MASH around, you know, 10 years ago or whatever. And we just kind of talked about it for a couple minutes. I could tell he kind of wanted to just kind
of. Sure.
But he just kind of looked at me and he goes, Tim, it's really nice to hear that young people still love the show. And I just nearly like died there. I was like, okay, yeah. I'm good. My life is complete.
Yep.
He just shook my hand, thanked me, and then we just kind of went on our separate ways. And then I said to my business partner, I said, okay, I need a beer now. I'm going back inside.
So, Tim, unrelated to that story, do you have like a spare room that I could stay in or anything like that? Is there any room for? I mean, I'll bring my masks or everything. It'll be fine.
Yeah, sure. I actually do have a guest room that I'm sitting in now. That's pretty
soon. Well, we can record from it. This is perfect. This Absolutely. Is lining up great.
I can tell you where this house is, too. I know kind of where it is. I don't know exactly where it is, but I know the neighborhood.
Unbelievable. My head exploded when you told me that story after we were off the air. I was like, you have to tell that story next year. So, oh, man. That's exactly the interaction you'd want to have. Yeah. You know, you get to have your moment. He's nice about it, and then it's over. You know, you didn't overplay your hand. You didn't go crazy. You signed my action figure. Yeah, you know, anything like that. Like you just kept it cool. That's wonderful. Well, that is just wonderful.
I did that once when I was younger, and two with somebody else. I saw this. I was probably 17 or 18. I saw this famous person that. At the time, I liked and admired, and I asked for an autograph, and he was just nasty.
Oh, see, yeah.
And so that kind of turned me off from doing that, but I'll still go up to somebody and say, you know, hi, how are you? Love your work. And then just kind of move on. But
yeah, right. You don't want to make a whole meal out of it. That's great. Again, that's exactly what you would want out of an interaction with Alan Alda. And if that happened to me, I probably wouldn't be able to compose myself at all, because I would just be, you know, I'd be sitting there, you know, asking him to order Adam's ribs or something. Yeah. You know, I would just make up I'd just become such an idiot.
It's so that's another great show.
Yeah, it's another
great episode.
Another great episode. So anyway, that's amazing. Yeah. That's amazing.
I tell you, for like the 10 minutes after that conversation, I was like, my hands were shaking, and I'm like, okay, all right, compose yourself. The moment happened. You'll remember it forever. Just breathe in, breathe out.
That's so cool. Oh, man. Awesome. So, okay. All right. Well, good. I'm glad you got to tell that story on the air.
Yeah.
So, okay. All right. Now we're going to go back to the that's the meat and potatoes. We're going to go back to the episode now, which is there's nothing like a nurse. As I was saying, there's a scene in the supply tent of Hawkeye messing around with the nurse, talking about how he's going to miss her. And at that same point, Trapper comes in with the nurse, kind of floats by, and he's saying, hey, I booked this supply tent. So they have the supply closet. So they have that scene. Then Margaret and Frank have a scene where they talk about how much they're going to miss each other. Frank gives her a bunch of his hair in an envelope, which is so creepy weird. As all get out. That used to be a thing. Like, you used to hear about, like, the lock of, you know, like, your soldiers would get, like, a lock of their girlfriend's hair. And it's one of those things that culturally just went away. And now I think people in the last 40 years are like, what? Well, and the fact that Frank gives her like a hunk of it in an envelope is
6 months worth of haircuts.
Yeah, 6 months worth of haircut. Oh, God.
Well, they would use that, you know, later in probably my favorite episode of the entire series. They'll use that line again.
Really? Okay. All right. Yeah. Oh, it's just so great. And then Margaret is like, okay. And then she thinks she suggests he gives it to his mother because she doesn't really want it.
I'm over 20. Yeah. I can give it to whoever I want.
So then it is really disgusting. So then, of course, there's the scene where Margaret and the nurses are shipping out. And she's giving everybody a salute. And Trapper gives her a little sort of like sarcastic little kids type salute. And Hawkeye decides to just plant a giant kiss on Margaret. Yeah. And, you know, it's probably not the most, I don't know, like it's probably not the most respectful joke on Margaret ever because we can see she's really into it. We see that she wraps her arms around Hawkeye. And then when he lets her go, she looks sort of stunned like, oh. And she practically has like little cartoon birds over her head and stuff.
Well,
so
they would do that
it's a funny gag though.
They'll do that with her several times because they Trapper did it once, and then
that's right.
In Abyssinia, Henry did it, and she's kind of like, "Ooh, I like that.
I mean, they did at least establish that she has a crush on Trapper.
Yeah.
So not on Hawkeye, but, you know, okay, whatever. And then we find out that the Klinger was in a bag and he falls off the back of the truck. And they're like, Klinger, that's desertion. He's, I just fell asleep in here, honest. Which is, I think it's one of the rare times we've actually seen Klinger in fatigues.
Yes.
He's not wearing not until, women's like, clothes for once.
Season 10 or 11 or 9 something or like something.
That. Yeah, yeah. So then they said that's the end of the first act is where the nurses are going away. And then we cut to then we have act two back in the O Club and we see Captain Spaulding doing a handstand. And then there's this great run about Hawkeye asking Mr. Kwong for the driest martini, a veritable dust bowl of a martini. It's a really, really funny scene. And I want to mention that Mr. Kwong is played by the actor Leland Sun. He appeared on a bunch of different MASHs, all playing a different character. He was also in movies like Down and Out in Beverly Hills, Hamburger, the motion picture. And he actually had a big stunt career. He did stunt work on Big Trouble in Little China, Beverly Hills Ninja, and Under the Rainbow. So, you know, kind of a mixed career there.
All pretty corny, but also lovable movies.
Absolutely. And then in the Oak Club, we have Captain Spaulding singing his song about, I don't know the name of it. It's the I Wonder If They Miss Us, Wouldn't That Be Funny? And that features what I think is the show's only montage.
Yes.
Ever. Yeah. There's going to be one more montage in Abyssinia Henry, but that montage is kind of exists outside of the sort of continuity of the story. But this is like the only sort of in-story montage where we see Trapper and Hawkeye start to recall the nurses, and we see footage of the nurses in various situations, including a clip from the opening credits of the nurses. And it's really the only time they've ever done that on the show.
Yeah. It's something that I remember kind of watching this years ago, and it just kind of threw me off because the shows I had seen beforehand, because like most people my age, I got into the show. The show was already in syndication, so it wasn't like you saw every single episode, nothing was streaming yet. And then when I bought the box set, I kind of first saw this specific episode when I bought the box set, and that kind of threw me off. And it's something that they never really tried to do again, and it was the first time they had done it. So it kind of, to me, it feels different from the show.
Mm-hmm.
Like they kind of were just trying out to see if it would fit for future episodes or whatever. But I think it definitely fits this specific, you know, montage for them to do that.
You know, yeah, it's a reverie. Yeah. It's interesting that the nurses we see in the clips, like, aren't like Nurse Kelly or like, like any of the ones that you sort of have seen more than once. We're seeing some of these one-off nurses in some ways. But yeah, it fits in that they're all sort of just thinking about the experiences with the nurses. And it's a nice little song. I think Larry Gelbart had said in some interview many years ago about why he did these scenes with Captain Spaulding, like why Captain Spaulding was on the show providing musical accompaniment. And he said they were just trying something.
Yeah.
They were just trying something different. And so, yeah, the montage fits in with that. They're just seeing, you know, can we expand the horizons of what MASH can be? And obviously they just felt like, okay, yeah, montages are not something that we're going to do. So then following that scene, following the song, there's surgery. There's a big wounded arrive, and we see that the other men, the enlisted officers, Radar, Klinger, and Father Mulcahy are brought in to help with nursing duties.
Yeah.
And I mean, good Lord, I know it's for the joke because you want to have the regulars worked in, but I would think Radar would be the last person he would bring in to help you.
Yeah.
hand off, you know, because as you see, he's helping Trapper. He's just holding all the instruments in his fist, and Trapper's just pulling them out like they're toothpicks or something. It's not a good idea, not a good way to perform surgery.
I feel like personally in this episode, Radar is the only one aside from the doctors, he's the only one that's overworked, and he's the one that's keeping this camp afloat during this episode.
Right.
And I feel like just having him in O.R., not only is it kind of like having, you know, somebody who has no idea what he's doing in there.
Desperately unqualified.
Underqualified, for sure. But also taking away from his other duties.
Yeah.
And there's another part in this scene, too, that really bothers me. I have one of the first side characters that I fell in love with is Father Mulcahy.
Okay.
And Hawkeye is kind of nice, but then he gets to be a little bit of an ass to him.
Yes,
and
he
it's
does.
Kind of like, dude, really? He's like helping you out, man. And it's just like, he goes, he asks for the tool, I forget what it was called. And then he asks for suction.
He says for a rake retract.
Yes, that's it. And then he throws a compliment and he goes, you know, you're all heart, father, you're something along those lines. I don't remember exactly what it was.
You're all heart, but unfortunately you're also all thumbs as well.
Yeah, and it's kind of like, really? He's like helping out. And if there's anybody at that camp who shouldn't be, what's the word I'm looking for? Who shouldn't be like, you shouldn't throw insults at him for helping out is Father Mulcahy. Not because he's a priest, but just because out of all the other side extras there, he's the one that is more likely to help out, even though he can't physically do any, you know, they will use him for surgery later on, but he's not qualified to be a doctor or a nurse, but he's willing to help out more than anybody else.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he's always in surgery.
Yeah.
Flitting around, grabbing things for people. But I've said that on previous episodes. I like that the show is willing to sometimes let Hawkeye be a dick.
Yeah.
That he's not perfect. He's not, you know, the perfect hero character. He can be, sometimes he's a jerk. Sometimes he's a jerk to Radar. I mean, they make, across this episode, they make numerous jokes about how short Radar is.
Between the two, they're two feet taller than you.
Right. And they've established that Radar doesn't like those jokes. Like, he is actually genuinely insulted. And they keep doing it. And later on in the season, they will finally stop it because Radar will finally say to the point, you know, I don't like this, knock it off. He doesn't say it like that, but he eventually lets Hawkeye know how insulted he is, and Hawkeye stops after that. But I mean, he can be a jerk sometimes.
Yes, he can.
So,
he was crabby most of this whole episode, too.
That's true.
Understandably because of the nurses being gone.
Yeah.
And the nurses are a big part of the, you know, operation of the hospital, but...
He's not getting laid. Yeah. He's not, getting help in surgery. There is a curious... feature to me in the scene of because we see Captain Spaulding performing surgery, and then we see that Frank is not in surgery.
Yes.
Like, what is he doing? Why is he out? He's out walking around. Like, don't they need him?
Yeah.
Like, you know, like, you, I would think that if you have wound, no matter how many wounded you've got, there's four doctors, including Captain Spaulding, in that scene. So if you have more than four patients, Frank should be in there performing surgery. That doesn't make any sense to me.
I thought about that. And then they have alluded to it in a few other episodes. I don't remember off the top of my head that there's typically one doctor doing triage.
I guess so.
So maybe that's what they were having him do, where they just felt like using Spaulding in the OR for the change of scenery. But it's strange that Frank isn't anywhere around.
He's just wandering around. Yeah. And then, of course, he calls Margaret while they're in surgery.
Yes.
He calls Margaret, and they do this little cute thing. And it features another little camera trick that would never be done in another episode, the split screen.
Yep.
We actually see Frank and Margaret talking side by side, and that is something they would, again, never do on the show before. We would do lots of phone calls on MASH, but they would never do split screen again. Yep. So this show is just busting the format all over the place.
Yeah, it's definitely trying something new with a couple of different shots. But I tried before we recorded. I've actually watched this episode three times today, and my mentality is I watch it one time just to keep, you know, pay attention to the main storyline, and then the other two times I tried to watch it just to see what's going on in the background. And I tried to figure out where Margaret was in the background, but it's just a wall with a couple of windows. But sometimes you could tell, like, when they're supposed to be somewhere else. I noticed that that's another part of the camp. I'm like, oh yeah, that's
right,
you know, whatever.
Right.
But I couldn't do that with this one, so they did a good job at, like, covering up the fact that Margaret's not there.
Yeah, because they must have had spare MASH walls on the 20th Century Fox lot. They could just grab one and put it up and put her in front of it, and then you're done.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, and of course, Hawkeye and Trapper ruin it by, we find out that they're listening in on the phone call.
Yeah.
Where they do the whole one, two,
three,
and then they run out and she says, get him, Frank. And they run away from Frank like they're afraid of him, which is strange because who's afraid of Frank? And then he falls into one of his own foxholes. Again, having a foxhole, any foxhole on the campgrounds when, you know, ambulances and patients are around does not seem like a good idea, but what does Frank know? He doesn't care. And then they park the Jeep over him, which is great. I love the whole bit about the great job, Frank, disguising yourself as a Jeep. And then it's the big scene in Henry's office where they watch Frank's wedding photos. And I mean, I laugh at this every time. we've talked about on many episodes of MASH before that the show sometimes feels like it is improvised when we know it isn't.
Yes.
And that is the testament to the writing, a testament to the acting. But boy, it really does feel like that these five actors, Wayne Rogers, Alan Alda, Jamie Farr, Gary Berghoff, and McLean Stevenson, are just riffing.
Yes.
On this. Because they really are totally doing an MST3K thing, and it's hilarious. Yeah.
It's definitely, you know, comic gold within this time frame.
And Frank looks like such a dork in his tux with his hair pasted down. And I mentioned in a previous episode, the actress playing Mrs. Burns is Janine Schulher, who played a nurse in two other episodes. She doesn't get any lines here. And I love her grim visage in this footage.
Very
she just looks so miserable.
It's perfect. It really is. She,
yeah. Oh.
Just the way you could definitely tell she has Louise Burns down pat, just in that, you know, what is that, 45 seconds that she's on screen as Louise Burns, because the way that they've always described her in past conversations, it's just kind of like, we know Frank married her for her dad's money.
Yep.
And
that's right.
She, I don't know why she settled on Frank. They never went down that avenue.
He's a prosperous doctor.
Yeah, I guess. But it's exactly how you would picture Louise Burns to be.
Yep. Oh, it's just every line in this sequence is funny. From when they're yelling, you know, "You'll be sorry," "Say no, Frank." They're yelling like they can, and then the bit where Frank gets the flypaper stuck to his head, and then there's the great bit where he's trying to cut the cake, and Trapper goes, "Even then, he didn't know how to hold a knife." And he's like, "Watch the cake die of malpractice." Yeah. Just like every, I would love to know. I mean, I'd love to know this in any episode, but especially like this scene, I would have loved to know like what the alts were by the writers, like what other jokes they came up with, because they were probably all hysterical.
They probably had like a sheet, just random one-liners to throw up.
Yeah. Oh, it's just so fun. And I again, another thing I've said in other episodes, I should stop saying that, because of course I'm repeating myself over the course of 250 episodes we're going
to
be doing.
It might happen from time to time.
Yeah, it has to be fun for the actors. Some of the actors get to wear different clothes for once.
Yes.
You know, I mean, Hawkeye, we never see Hawkeye at home, so Hawkeye only ever wears his fatigues or maybe like his tux once in a while. But, you know, here you get to see Larry Linville in like a wedding, you know, in his wedding tux, and he gets to drive like a Studebaker or whatever it is. We got to see Henry in like t-shirt and shorts. It had to be fun for the actors just to get something different to do once in a while.
Yeah, that'll be kind of cool if I was an actor, just because you're in this army camp and you're just wearing these fatigues all the time, and then something different must be nice for them to do.
Yeah, absolutely. And then of course, at the end of the scene, I love the detail that when Frank comes running in and he interrupts the movie, he's covered in dirt.
Yes.
Which is a nice little detail that, of course, he was just in the foxhole.
Yeah.
And he probably had to claw his way out. I'm sure nobody helped him out. But I like that extra attention to detail that was like, oh, okay, yeah, he's full of dirt because he's stuck in the foxhole. That's a great detail. And then, of course, we get the return of 5 o'clock Charlie, which is a nice throwback from a season two episode. MASH didn't always have a lot of continuity.
I actually had that in my notes here, that there's a lot of continuity with this episode. And I think a lot of that has to do with Larry Gelbart writing it. Because, I mean, sometimes if you have if you have another writer come in from the outside that might not be familiar with 100% of the work that you've done so far.
Right, right.
They kind of skewer things. But with Larry Gelbart having his fingerprints all over the series and this episode, he knows what has happened previously.
Right.
So with 5 o'clock Charlie, with talking, I mean, the continuity didn't stick with Radar's sister, but we also hear about Radar's sister again.
Right, right. The sister who would never be referred to again after a while.
Yeah, and I believe they mentioned her a couple episodes ago, too, maybe? I might be wrong, but I feel like there's another episode previously where they mentioned Radar's sister. Or was it? I know he had a younger brother.
Yeah, he mentions a brother,
but,
too.
There's continuity issues with that. But it's the 5 o'clock Charlie's nice to see that kind of throwback. And it's a good continuity storyline.
Yeah, I like that. I mean, because I said they established the 5 o'clock Charlie at the end of that episode wasn't dealt with.
Yes.
Like, he just gets to fly off. So apparently he's still a problem.
There's another
he's
continuity
still going around
thing I picked
yeah,
up, too.
Which
is, if we go back a little bit to where Hawkeye and Abel are, you know, making out in the supply closet, Trapper and the other nurses on the other side. Abel actually mentions to him, "Why are all the good ones married?" And Hawkeye says, "Who says I'm married?" And she said, "You did." That's a throwback to the ceasefire episode.
That's right.
Where he was making out with another nurse and told her that he can't be with her because he's married.
Right.
So there's another continuity part that actually traveled with the storyline. That's nice to see that they didn't really stick with it, you know, later on. So
no, they didn't. The one detail about the episode I think doesn't hold up terribly well is, and it's a repeater because we see in Frank's wedding photo that Mrs. Burns is the one who drives the car, and they kind of take that as like, oh, Frank's emasculated. Kind of thing, and they think that's funny. And then later on, when the nurses return, we see it, the same thing happens with Margaret and Frank, where Frank wants to drive, and Margaret insists that she's going to drive, and they cut to Hawkeye and Trapper, who laugh hysterically at that. Yeah. And that's a joke that doesn't hold up terribly well nowadays, because it's like, well, what, you know, okay, they're laughing at Frank because he's not wearing the pants in the relationship, but nowadays we're like, all right, whatever. That joke doesn't track. But it's okay generally, just because we just see that. If you want to be charitable, you just say, well, Frank clearly just has a type, sort of. Like, he wants to be kind of dominated.
Yeah.
And so that's something Hawkeye and Trapper just find very funny. And they grab the nurses and walk off, and we hear Hawkeye say something like, it's great to have you back, or something like that, or welcome back. And then the button scene, which is sometimes cut in syndication, is just a nice scene of Captain Spaulding, Hawkeye and Trapper, singing this song again. And we see it's outside, and they eventually, like, they're walking around, and everybody in the compound starts doing a sing-along. And they follow behind them, and we see some of the nurses are just coming out of the shower, other people wearing fatigues, and we see Hawkeye's waving them all on. And they just wander around, and it's a beautiful scene. It's a really sweet. Everybody looks really happy. They clearly, obviously, the actors are in Southern California, so it probably was a beautiful day, and they all wander off into the swamp together. And it's just a great, mellow, nice way to end this moment where it's like, for this brief moment, everybody's happy. Nobody's really happy being in Korea, but in this moment, they're as happy as they're going to be. And it's a really nice, sweet way to end the show.
It is. It is. It's a great, great little montage there. I actually just realized that I actually have that episode running on my phone in the background here while we're talking. And there's a shirt that Spaulding is wearing that I actually just bought a very similar shirt. And I'm looking at it, I'm going, hey, I know that shirt. Anyway, sorry, I get sidetracked like a 4-year-old. It's like, hey, look at that, just shiny things. My only thing I was thinking of when I was watching that is, how are all these people fitting in the swamp?
It's very crowded.
Like you're right. This is a perfect way to end this episode. But where are they all going to go into?
They're maybe going to come in and out or something like that. Yeah. And then the one last thing I will mention, and just because, again, I'm an obsessive nerd about this stuff, and I mean, that's why I do the show, is when you watch the MASH credits, for the most part, once you get through the guest cast, the credits tend to look the same from card to card, because obviously it's all the same people. So, and their names are in the same spot in every episode. Like, you know, production supervisor Mark Evans, unit production manager Ted Butcher, assistant director Leonard Smith Jr. These are all kind of the same people you see from episode to episode. Director of photography William Jurgensen, art director Roger Mouse. And then when you get past the film editors Fred W. Berger, Sanford Tischler, then you get to the music supervision, and all of a sudden that title card looks different. And you're like, wait, just like in terms of where my eyes are used to seeing the letters, it looks different. And I realize this is like the one episode that has an extra credit on that, on the card over Margaret. It says music supervision Lionel Newman, theme Johnny Mandel, of course. And then at the bottom, original songs sung and composed by Loudon Wainwright III. So it's like, it's the one time you're going to see like a different credit in an episode of MASH.
I did not notice that. Only because, I mean, I probably noticed it years ago, but as much as I love having the DVD box set, life is so much easier with streaming.
It is.
When it was on Netflix, I would watch them on Netflix, and then when it was moved over to Hulu, I've been watching a lot of it on Hulu now. Just because when I get home from work or whatever, or I actually tend to watch MASH before I go to bed, because it really kind of helps me to relax and just kind of take my mind off of whatever has been going on that day.
Yeah, it's very soothing.
So there's no, you know, when it comes up to hit next episode, I just hit next. So I never really caught on to that with this episode.
Yep. Yeah. I don't, I think I didn't notice it the first like 100 times I've seen the show. And then I was watching it once, and I was like, "What? That just looks weird. Why does that look the kerning is off? What's going on there?" And then I say, "Oh, that's what it is." So overall, it's a classic episode. It's very, very funny. The situation is great. The idea that you have to bunk out, get rid of the nurses during an emergency. It's a classic. It's one of the best episodes of season three. I just love it from top to bottom. So Tim, do you have a particular favorite line or joke from this episode?
You know, I tried to think of something here for this, and I can't really just pick one because this – I'm not saying this episode is absolutely perfect, but there's no line in here that just sticks out to me like a lot of other lines do in different episodes. Me personally, when I fall in love with a line from a character, I tend to use that line in my everyday life. So I use, to quote an episode in season four, which is "Dear Peggy," that's – my personal favorite episode of this entire series, of the entire show.
Wow.
I can go through that episode line by line and just quote the whole thing from start to end.
Okay.
But I don't get a single line from this particular episode. I do, however, like you, I love the film scene with the whole Frank's wedding. But what gets me to laugh every single time is that phone call between Frank and Margaret. And when they're on the phone and she goes, "Frank, this is so high school." And it's like, okay, you count 1, 2, and then Trapper and Hawkeye just go 3. Every time I watch that, like I said before, I've watched this episode 3 times before we recorded today, and I laughed just as hard every time I watched that scene. Because I know I have a brother who's, 2 years younger than I am. And when you're 14, 15, and you're both starting to get into girls and or whatever, and all of a sudden there's phone conversations when nobody had cell phones and there's 2 phones in the house. You pick up the phone, you're listening to your brother's conversation. it kind of took me back to some of those things growing up. And then find out that your brother's on the other line listening to you talk to this girl. And then, you chase him down the hallway and "Mom," but I love that specific, joke and that scene.
It is a great moment. Yeah. They're such dicks. Yeah, they're such dicks to them. Yeah, that is a very funny moment. My favorite line, again, this episode has got so many funny lines, but the one that makes me laugh, I think, the hardest is when in the O Club and Hawkeye and Trapper are talking about that they're so – how bored they are. And Trapper says, "Do you want to look at a picture of my wife?" And Hawkeye says, "I've seen every picture of every wife under this camp." And then Trapper suggests watching the roll of film under Frank's bunk. And then Hawkeye just shrugs it off by says, "That's probably just a movie of Frank's parents being told he died at birth."
That is
such a grim joke.
Yeah.
But I just love the way he delivers it. I just like Frank's parents being told he died at birth. And I just love that so much.
The idea.
Oh, but God.
It's okay. All right, fine.
I laughed so hard at that. It's just fantastic. Yeah. So overall, it's a classic episode. So, Tim, thank you so much for coming back. Thank you so much for telling stories. Now, while we were recording this episode, you didn't meet anybody from the show while we were doing this, right? You don't have any other story you want to share before we get off the air? You didn't meet Gary Berghoff while we were talking or anything like that?
No, my Alan Alda book did not come to life.
Okay, all right, good
but
to know.
But I do have a couple of side notes here that I wanted to bring up, too, before we go, if that's fine.
All right, go right ahead.
During the OR scene, I forgot to bring this up, Trapper offered $500 for Nurse Baker. Mm-hmm. I did the conversion. That's a lot of money for Nurse Baker.
Yeah.
It's $5,319.27.
Good deal.
And when they allude to making $400 a month as a doctor in the Army, that's a lot of money.
That's a lot of money. They're doing okay for themselves.
Also, I just wanted to thank you again for having me on twice now. And I hope that we can continue to go along here. But I just wanted to bring up that when I first came on last season and did the trial of Henry Blake, which is, again, another one of my favorite episodes.
Great episode.
I gotta be honest, I was a little disappointed I didn't get picked for my favorite episode of that season. But then when you released it and you had Margaret Houlihan, I said, "This is the greatest thing I've ever heard." Or Loretta Swit, sorry. You had her on, and because there's just a little bit of me that I love that episode so much. And if I was to put a Mount Rushmore of MASH episodes, Hot Lips and Empty Arms is on that Mount Rushmore.
Mm-hmm.
And I was just a little upset I didn't get that. And then when you had it released, and here is Loretta Swit, I'm like, oh, okay, this makes perfect sense. And I got to tell you, I don't, when I listen to an episode, I don't go back and listen to it unless for whatever reason, but I've probably listened to that episode and you interview her like 6 or 7 times.
Oh my goodness.
It's such a great episode, the interview that you had with her, and I could hear it in your voice that you're just as excited to have her on as we are to listen to it. So.
Oh, I was over the moon. It's one of the great experiences of my life. But yeah, I always had a twinge of guilt because a lot of people asked for that episode when I was organizing season 2, and I didn't want to tell anybody that they couldn't get that one for that reason, yeah. Because I'm superstitious. I don't talk about guests until the show is recorded,
yeah.
Because to me, it can always fall apart.
Yeah,
and so I just had to keep telling everybody, sorry, that one's taken. And I even had people say, who got that one? I was like, I can't really get into it, yeah. But trust me, you'll understand when it happens.
Well, you know what, when you released it and I was over the moon for you. I was like, you know what, that's pretty damn awesome. And it was a really good interview, and I loved listening to her talk about it. So
it was great. It was a true honor to speak with her. So again, thank you. Well, thank you so much, Emmett. Thank you for coming back. And yes, we will continue on. You'll come back for later seasons as we're rolling on here, because I always enjoy talking to you. And like I said, I'm amazed to see what crazy experience you have with a MASH cast member. By the next time you and I talk,
maybe there'll be another one.
I bet there will be. It sounds like that's the thing that happens to you. So anyway, thank you so much for coming on. Thanks everybody for listening. Of course, we're always talking MASH over on Twitter, which is at MASH477Cast. You can find back episodes of the show on the website, FineWaterPodcast.com. You can subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and Stitcher. And you can support the Fine Water Podcast Network over on Patreon, which is at patreon.com/FW Podcast. And there you can unlock various rewards, one of which is to be name checked on a show of your choice. So big thanks to Adam Sanders, Nicholas Prom, Russell Burbage, Stan Peel, and Suzanne Holland for their support of MASHcast. This is very exciting. So thanks everybody for listening. And until next week, that is all.
A dry martini, Mr. Kwok. A very dry martini. A very dry, arid, barren, desiccated, veritable dust bowl of a martini. I want a martini that can be declared a disaster area. Mix me just such a martini.
With 2 straws.